and welcome to CEO Nights with me, Nyimpini Mabunda. This is a podcast where we get up close and personal with some of the most admired CEOs in South Africa. You, the viewer or listener, get to be a fly on the wall in a relaxed, informal, peer-to-peer conversation between two senior leaders outside of the boardroom. The guest CEO get to share their life journeys, just like I did in my best-selling book, Take Charge, which inspired the podcast, as we continue on the journey to grow the next generation of business leaders. Make sure to grab a copy and discover the story for yourself. Take Charge is now also available as an audiobook. This evening is particularly special because not only do I have a CEO guest, I'm also talking to someone who is my personal mentor that I've known for quite a long time. Many would argue that it doesn't need an introduction because a lot of us love Nando's, right?
Yeah.
Hey. So, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce the co-founder of Nando's, a philanthropist of note, a global business leader, highly respected entrepreneur, a father, a husband, loving husband, and a grandfather. Please join me as we welcome Robbie Brosen. How are you, my friend?
I'm strong.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Welcome. So here I am, right? Many, many years ago, I get this fantastic opportunity to interview for one of the best CMO jobs in the country. I've been recruited by a search firm to be a CMO for Nando's. Now, you know those ads, eh? I mean, who does better marketing and campaigns? And then when you get a call and say, Nando's is looking for a CMO, and they've seen your profile, they would like to speak to you, I nearly hit the roof. And it's like, really? Wow. And I said, I'm going for this. So I'm excited. I go through the various stages of interviews. And then the agent comes back and says, now for the last interview. Final interview is with the founder. And then Robbie invites me to his office, which is next to his house. And then we go there
in Inanda,
on
yeah.
a Friday afternoon. Yeah. And I arrive there Friday afternoon.
That's a dangerous place.
I fly from Cape Town and I arrive. Now, Robbie comes to the room. And the first thing he does, he offers me a double shot of whiskey.
Peri
we
whiskey.
Hadn't started talking. He just said, hi. I flew from Cape Town. I'm thirsty. Right? It's a Friday afternoon, but at the same time, I'm like, is this real or is this a trap? You know, what do I do in this case? Do I accept? Don't I accept? And I went like, what the heck? Let's go for it. Yeah, Paul. And then 3 hours later, we're still sitting there. I don't know how many glasses.
You know, we're not big drinkers.
Yeah.
But in a Friday afternoon, certainly, that's like when, just before Sabbath,
yeah.
nothing better than a drink. And a few of the interviews that we've had are very special people. We sit and have a drink. Don't force anybody to drink, but
sure.
it is a good, you know, it's a nice thing at the end of the day. I'll never forget the day when Apini said he's leaving Nando's. I was beyond devastated, okay? Because for me, it was, you remember that.
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And I was like, oh my God, you know, what have we done wrong? And how can we not keep somebody like you? But at the same time, I knew that sometimes you got to fly. You got to leave the nest and fly. And we've kept in touch since
Absolutely.
That day. And I think our friendship has grown, actually,
Absolutely.
From that.
You know, I was actually in many ways inspired by you because I was trying to be a global citizen. When I left Nando's, you'll remember, I got an opportunity to take up quite a senior role and relocate to the UK.
Yeah.
And you've built a business, Robbie, from South Africa, which has taken on the world. When I arrived in the UK, I was surprised to learn and experience the popularity of Nando's. And I remember you telling me that actually in the UK, it even grew to be even bigger than South Africa.
Yeah.
But how do you get the boldness to go from the little South Africa and go like, I'm going to go everywhere? And because I also wanted to be a global citizen, benchmark with the best, learn from the best. But you had done it. What inspired you to go global?
I think we were also a bit stupid, you know. I think that often in, you know, as a young entrepreneur, I mean, very early on, we wanted to go global. It was part of our vision because we felt that the world hadn't really experienced peri-peri chicken. You know, there was a deep-fried chicken, but really the world hadn't tried peri-peri chicken. And so when we started, we really had the vision of taking it global. We felt that we could take it global from Africa.
From the beginning.
Take it global from Africa. I didn't realize how hard it was going to be really to do that.
Yeah.
And honestly, if we hadn't have partnered with the Enthoven family when we did, which was very early on in our journey, I wouldn't be here today, honestly.
Mm.
Because I think the kind of learnings we got, and it was one of my very first learnings is the people that you surround yourself with are critical to your success. It's not about you as an individual. It's about who you bring together with you. And there's a saying that careful who you let in, because it's hard to let them out sometimes.
Yeah. Actually, when I did my business school studies at UCT, they said, go into partnership as if you're going to divorce, as if you're going to break up.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, in many cases, it does happen. Yeah. And it's very, very hard. But so this thing about getting the right partner and a co-founder and so on, it's well documented, but it's harder to do than many people imagine.
It's very hard. And I think when you base a relationship on values, for example, then when the difficult times come, those values kick in.
Mm.
So you test those values at very interesting times.
Yeah.
And as a family, for example, the Enthoven family have been incredibly supportive, but at the same time, quite challenging on me in the early days, because I was a young entrepreneur, really vision going global, and I didn't quite have things in place. So we made some mistakes early on. I was very fortunate to have my father as a mentor of mine, and Dick Enthoven as another mentor. And the two of them were incredibly powerful to me. My father was an accountant, so everything was about cost.
Yeah.
What is this cost? What is the water here cost? And Dick Enthoven was all about value. What's the value of this water? And so the cost and value are two very different kind of influences that have affected me.
Yes.
Because it's different ways to look at your business and different ways to look at your life. And it's been a very great influence on shaping myself personally and in a way the Nando's brand in how we've gone global. Because you can do things in a particular way, in a particular style. And I've been fortunate to have those two mentors for me. Unfortunately, both have passed.
Mm.
And I miss them very much, but I was steeped in 30 years with both of them. And so that was, my father, well, certainly much longer, but certainly in the Nando's business, 37 years of Nando's and 35 years with Dick Enthoven. They're still with us, but Dick was with us 35 years.
But Robbie, when you have such strong and super successful leaders around you, don't you feel exposed when they are no longer around? At what point do you feel like,
I've actually got goosebumps when you ask me that question, to be honest, because I do feel that.
Yeah.
Okay, I really do feel that. And at times I feel like I've got to step up almost as the adult in the room now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's a very tough, it is sometimes very challenging. And, you've got to dig deep in your soul sometimes to think, like, what would they say? What would they do? And behave like them, and I don't feel like I can fill their shoes in any way.
So this podcast and conversation is really about developing us as leaders, learning from those who have journeyed before us and are continuing to journey.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I get a lot and I get asked a lot, and thank you for your contribution to my book, Take Charge. You wrote an amazing introduction to it, is this imposter syndrome. Where sometimes you gotta be in rooms where you're not feeling so confident of yourself, you're not feeling so sure. And you've been around presidents, you've been around big celebrities, and so on and so forth. How do you deal with imposter syndrome?
It is a tough thing. I mean, I agree with you. Sometimes you don't feel like you really do belong there.
Yeah.
And you're questioning yourself, and it's that. But for me, it's always getting back to your own roots and getting back to who you are. And don't pretend to be anybody else.
Mm.
Because if you do that, if you don't bring yourself to the party or to whatever the situation is, you're going to fail. So it's something that to be natural is an incredible part of getting rid of that imposter syndrome. It's just who I am, who I am. If the president doesn't like it, the president doesn't like it.
Sure.
This is,
and you're at your best when you've been yourself.
Yourself. So you come, if you walk in and you pretend that you're something else, that's when you're really, challenging that imposter syndrome, I think. Because you're trying to puff yourself up to be something different. And it's very, very hard to maintain that at a pace or even at a sustainable level, because you will be found out.
Of course, of course.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I think. So one of your biggest strengths, in my view, and we've collaborated this because we've spoken to a few people, is your relationships and your network.
Yeah.
And what amazes me about it is that I cannot put a certain thread through it and say you network with people who come from your culture or people of your age or people of your gender or people in South Africa. You just relate to everybody. I mean, just this year alone, I've met 10 people through you. Incredible people. And everyone says you is so incredible. Amongst leaders, they also struggle with networking. How do you do it? What is it about you that gravitate people towards you or the other way around?
Look, I don't know. I honestly couldn't answer that. I think that for me, it's about being honest. And often I'm trusting.
Mm.
So I'll trust people. But I think that sometimes the people that you trust the most hurt you the most.
Sure.
So now and again, you trust somebody and then you get a smack and then you think, whoa, and you've got to retreat a little bit.
Sure.
And that's when your very close relationships kick in.
Yeah.
But naturally, I'm a very trusting person. So I've got a situation now where, you know, just you do something and things aren't working out the way they should be working out.
Mm.
And the people get a hold of me and say, listen, don't let that affect you. Be you. Carry on being you.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't let that body blow stop you from being who you are.
Mm.
And for me, it is that kind of question. When you meet somebody, the people that you've met, okay, were people because of you.
Yeah.
In other words, yes. my trust in you and my kind of faith in you and my respect for you was really, when I phoned them, I knew who I was sending to them.
Yes.
Do
and when
I
get
mean?
There, I need to be careful not to embarrass you.
Well,
I need
I
to
knew
show
you
up.
Wouldn't. I
because
knew
I know.
Wouldn't.
I'm just talking generally,
no,
right?
No, but
I mean,
I'm saying that
because
is
of the
truth.
Responsibility, by the way,
course, of
in
course.
A network.
100%.
And when
huge,
I sponsor you,
huge.
You have to carry that through.
100%. There's a big responsibility to that. And when I'm then selecting somebody that I think you should meet.
Yeah.
In my head, I've thought that through very carefully because I've got a massive responsibility to you that if I send you somebody and they're not who they say they are, it's not fair to you. You're trusting me. And
I
so
hear you.
So trust is a very big factor, you know, in terms of my kind of style is I'm trusting.
So I hear that through our research, by the way. But one of the ways, of course, to network and get people together is through an event, a function, socializing, and you're always open to that. But we can never get you on a cruise or on a boat or on a yacht.
I hate boats.
Talk to us about that.
I get very seasick. Yeah? I don't know.
I mean, you. I'm going to be a bit racist here, but are you sounding like duckies now? Apparently, duckies can't swim. You know, what's your issue?
I'm not a boat person.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
I don't know what it is, but I just get seasick. Even on a big cruise liner.
Yeah.
Okay. I get on there and I'm just seasick.
Stable as it is.
Stable as it is.
Yeah.
It's like I get that kind of feeling and I try and stay away from boats. And also, you know, owning a boat I think is such a schlep.
Yeah.
You've got to pull it in the water, take it out. All your friends want to come on the boat for the boat, not for you. You know.
Yeah.
So I think it's just I don't like boats.
By the way, there's a bit of a fun fact. So we asked our contacts to say, for someone who owns one of the most loved chicken brands in the world, can he cook? So how are you at home? Can you whip a nice meal?
So I can braai.
Is that where the grilling influence came
That's
from?
Where the grilling influence comes from. I'm a great braai. I'm the Sunday braai. Don't fiddle with my braai.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a Sunday braai, but I'm not a great classic chef.
Yeah.
In other words, if you put me in the kitchen to do something other than a braai, bit of a challenge. I'd like to see myself as a chef, but no.
Have you had independent reviews of your braai? Because what
my
we also had is,
it,
is something to the effect that it comes out a bit charred, but you say it's well done.
I like it more than well done. Oh,
really?
My mother loves my braai. Yeah?
Oh yeah. That's good enough, right? That is good
That's
enough.
That's independent.
Anyway, let's actually pick it up on that now that you've mentioned your mom. One thing that sometimes, you know, we associate with people who've done well in life is not all the time, but there's a bit of indulgence and a bit of showboating and enjoying your success. You know, lovely house, nice cars, holidays, and so on and so forth. It doesn't seem to be your personality, though, because I believe where you live is pretty much where you grow up, and very little has changed. And to my surprise, for a very long time, you've actually driven an old Audi, which was a hand down from your mother, like 20 years old. So it probably had to break before you gave it in.
Yeah.
And you run around in a very small vehicle right now for security reasons I won't mention. What is it about? I know that you're humble, but surely at some point you also need to enjoy the success of your hard work.
Yeah, I think for me, the success is not shown through the assets that I have. It's not about, you know, I've got a beautiful car, I don't need another car. You know, yeah. For me, the success of life is really enjoying yourself with your friends and your family. And I'm short of nothing. And I think we've got everything that I need. And when we travel well, we stay in beautiful hotels.
Sure.
You know, so I don't feel like I have to have the best, you know, assets. To me, sometimes the more assets you've got, the more you're worried. You know, and you got to try and keep that balance. You know, I've learned very early that assets don't bring happiness. You know, sometimes it's a short-term happiness when you go shopping and you buy something and you think, well, I've bought it. But it doesn't necessarily bring you that permanent happiness. It's a spike. And so to me, I've worked out now what really brings me happiness, what makes me satisfied.
And I can guess, it's probably been a gift to others.
Exactly.
That generosity. Because what we had is that though you don't spoil yourself, even with the assets, but you spoil others. You spend more time shopping for other people and forget to get a shirt for yourself.
100%. I love buying gifts for other people. If I can buy a gift for somebody else as opposed to buying myself, I do buy for myself. Let's not say that I don't. And I especially love it when I'm with my son, Jonty, and we're going shopping in London. Okay, that's one of my highlights of my life. My wife is the worst shopper. Okay?
How does that work?
I can't even tell you. I was with her in Paris, okay? Yeah. And I said to her, we were going on like the fanciest street in Paris, okay, Rue de Montagne, which has got like all the brands.
Yeah.
Okay, Louis Vuitton, it's got Gucci. Yeah. And I said to her, we're in Paris, we celebrate, I want to buy you a gift. She says she wants nothing.
I thought you were going to say she looked for Mr. Price.
She did, okay? She was like, I want to get a Mr. Price t-shirt. I'm like, let's go to Gucci, I want to buy you Gucci. She's like, no, I don't want to buy it. And I'm saying, well, let's go in there, let's have a look at least, maybe there's something.
Yeah.
And I think there's a special thing in that.
Yes.
But I also enjoy buying like a Louis Vuitton for somebody, or I enjoy buying her Louis Vuitton or a Gucci. There's a magic in that, and there's power also in being able to buy it and not buying it.
Yes,
you know what I mean? There's a very big power in that you don't always have to be
there. But is that power of control?
It's a power of control.
Yeah,
it's a power of control, but it's also a power. There's a power in knowing that you can do it and not doing it.
Oh, wow,
for the right reason. If you know what I mean. And I think that it's, my wife's taught me a lot. You know, we've been married for nearly, I don't know, 40 years.
Wow.
Okay. And I think she's the one that needs a prize, not me.
Yes.
Okay. She puts up with a lot of shit, I can tell you now.
Yeah. Let's give her a big round of applause.
Yeah, I promise you. To be married to someone like me is not easy.
Yeah.
Because I'm restless. I have spent in the early days a lot of time out of home.
Sure.
You know, I'm always, it's not easy, you know, because we're different. You know, she's very much a homemaker. She's not a corporate wife at all. Okay. If I take her out for a corporate dinner, she sits next to the chairman of a public company. She doesn't play up to him in any way. You know what I mean?
She's
got her own nice tie or whatever. And there's a magic in that as well. So that also grounds me. I've learned also over the years that, sure. One day you've got the carrot in your hand and the next day it's up your palm.
Absolutely.
And I can promise you got to understand that you can get smacked very quickly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And my father taught me that very much, eh?
So actually,
and Dick Enthoven as well, by the way. Dick, I mean, seriously wealthy guy. Okay. And he used to walk around in shorts and Crocs before Crocs were even famous.
Yeah.
And in Birkenstocks before they were famous. Okay, and he looked like a guy that you actually wanted to give him a few bob just to go and buy him a few.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that could afford, you know, the top places. And you suddenly realize that it's not about what you're showing. It's about who you are inside.
You say it's the people that makes the chicken.
Yeah.
That matters.
Yeah.
And you leave it.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes, you know, people say that and they don't really, they pay lip service. People are our most important assets and all of. But I mean, I've seen you in action, walking the floor and being in this in the Nando's restaurant, and you relate to everybody. How does that really come about? Because it's quite genuine.
It's just me. I mean, I don't know. It's something that I love.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm energized by the people in the business.
Yeah.
And I'm energized. If I'm having a bad day, I'll go to a Nando's restaurant and talk to the guys. That's what, you know, I can go to Dubai. And, you know, my wife laughed at me because I went to Dubai last year.
Yeah.
And we've got about 400 people that won, like, long service awards and various. And I shook hands with 400 people.
Wow.
It was like a line.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife said to me, the 400th person, you were still excited to talk to them.
Because, I mean,
That fuels me. I can't explain it.
I mean, Robbie, you were ahead of your time. And you actually are in many ways.
Even
in the creativity, right? I mean, businesses now are talking about blending creativity or the left brain and the right brain to move things forward, and they call it innovation. You did it a long time ago. Today, businesses are talking about being purpose-led, leading with a heart. You know, values. You've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah,
we
did that naturally. I mean, there's no question we were ahead. Purpose, no question, we've been ahead of the game by far. And that was a natural thing for us. It was completely natural. We didn't try and create that.
Yeah.
And we've always been a very values-driven business with a very strong purpose.
Yeah.
And for me, that's been a very clear thing for me. You know, in about 2010, so it's already like 14 years ago, I stepped down as the CEO, okay, because I just felt that the business, I wasn't enjoying myself. For me, you've got to enjoy business. It's got to be fun, you know. There's no such thing for me as like blending, like you behave differently at home and then in the business. Like,
yeah, you're one person.
One person.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't say, well, I'm leaving the home and I'm going to be business, and business is business and home is home.
Mm.
No, to me, it's you got to be who you are. And at a particular point in time, in 2010, I just felt the business had outgrown me.
Mm.
I wasn't enjoying it. Mm. I wasn't good at it. Okay, and I was starting to suffer.
Mm.
And I felt that I needed to step down. And that's when the power of having partners, where I could sit with the Eindhovens and say, you know, I'm not ready for this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not ready to take it to the next step.
Yeah.
And for me, there's a thing that's very clear. It's called the power of giving power away.
Yeah, wow.
There's a time that you give power away as opposed to the power being taken away from you.
Mm.
And I think a lot of founders don't understand that part of the journey.
Yeah.
And a lot of, especially family-owned or founder-owned businesses, the founder stays far too long, and then you suffocate the business.
You're constrained, yeah.
And the business is all... And so the Eindhovens asked me a very simple question. Is Nando's a dynastical business?
Mm.
Do you want this to pass to your family and your kids? And I didn't want to automatically say my kids must get involved and take over. That's their own life, you know. My son Danny's a doctor, he's a physician. Jonty's an incredible entrepreneur, and he wants to do his own thing.
Mm.
And I want him part of the business now. And my daughter's an occupational therapist. So, but at the right time, Jonty can come in at the right time that suits him and it suits the business without pressure. Because otherwise, he's got to come in and be the son that takes over from this. And I just don't think it's fair. Or my eldest son being a doctor, or Jamie, not to say that the daughter can't run the business.
Oh,
maybe she can run it.
Yeah.
You know. But for me, it was. And the Eindhovens asked that question, and it was. For me, it was very clear, it's not a dynastical business.
Yeah.
Let's get a professional management to run this business, family-owned, but professionally managed.
So,
and that's been a great blend, I must tell you. It's been a long journey and frustrating.
I
must tell you, at times I've been like,
You
know, because you want to slap some people.
Yeah.
Because you when you bring professionals in, it's process, and the heart can go a little bit.
And I believe there were some people that you were close to that were let go. but yeah. some of the professional managers. I mean, and people that the founder brought to the business, yeah. and now they're let go.
Yeah.
I mean, damn. I mean, I would have stormed in there and said, whose business is this?
No, exactly.
Do you know who I am?
That's exactly. And? I mean, it is tempting to do that at times.
Uh-huh.
But you do know that at the end of the day, you know, the business... There's an ebb and flow, and yeah. and as my father always told me, a pattern will emerge.
Oh yeah.
Okay, with people, so that a pattern comes through it, and if you're going to give the business away,
yeah.
okay, and it's like giving your baby to somebody.
Yeah.
Okay, and if you then go dig in every little move they make, you've got to trust again. It's about trust. You haven't let go, so you really have to let go. It's very, very difficult. Okay, it's very difficult, and I've had some extremely frustrating times.
So one of the things I write about in my book, I think it's the second last chapter, it's mental health. Did you have to see a therapist or someone to help you during that? Because psychologically, it must have been
hard. You know, it's an interesting thing. So
yeah.
I've had two mental health kind of issues in my life. One is when I worked for my father. Because I worked for my father. When I left university, I worked for my father for a while.
Mm.
And I had some really dark moments in that relationship because when you're the founder's son, and that's why I'd never, like, embedded it in me was not to force my children to be in the business.
Mm.
It was their own choice and for their own. But there were certain days when I worked for my father that I couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
So I had such dark. I was in such a dark place.
Yeah.
That you know to go to work was actually such a difficult thing. You know, I got over that, obviously, and it wasn't in a time when mental health was even an issue.
Yeah, an issue,
it was
yeah.
people were like, yeah. Just get on with it. You know what I mean? It was like, you don't see anybody. When I handed over Nando's in 2010, I went through probably 18 months of a minor depression.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Okay. But the CEO of our UK business, a guy by the name of Rob Paps, who was the CEO of our UK business, got hold of me one day at a Nando's conference in Barcelona. We had a Nando's conference in Barcelona, and he's a big guy. And we were drinking, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and he had beer breath on him. You know,
yeah.
he was a big guy with beer breath looking at me.
Yeah.
And 2 o'clock in the morning, and he said to me, "Soul man, you've lost your soul."
No.
Okay, and because you've lost your soul, we've lost ours.
Sure.
You better go and get your soul back.
Wow.
Okay, and that was when I actually went back to my room. You know, one of those moments when you go back to your room,
which
it was like a light bulb moment when I said, I thought to myself, you know, I've lost my soul. You know what? How do I get my soul back? And that got me on the road to malaria. In terms of when I got back to South Africa, we then looked at how do we. I got back and said, what do I do? How do you really bring purpose into something? And our journey then, I latched onto something to get my soul back. Malaria got my soul back for me.
Yeah.
And you've played a big role in that journey with us, as you know.
I remember
so
that.
I'm gratefully thankful for you for what you've done. But purpose got me back on track.
Yeah.
And purpose got my soul back. And suddenly I started feeling, you know, there's a feeling when you give to people, there's a feeling you can't explain how good you feel.
Yeah.
It's such a great feeling when you know that you're giving as opposed to taking.
So one of the very important roles of a leader in a business is to create the environment for others to succeed.
You know?
It's really important. So when you say there's a feeling that you get or the feeling that you create, it's exactly that.
You know what? I'm not being rude.
Yeah.
But I did prepare something for you.
Yeah.
Very rare that I prepare.
I'm shocked. What's happening here?
But I'm a big fan of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. He was the chief rabbi of England and Ireland. Okay. And he passed away a few years ago. But he was a man of extreme wisdom. And he's just a guy that was also way ahead of his time. And this is his quote on leadership.
Yeah.
Okay. And it says, "There's no better way to flood life with meaning then to have lifted others and helped them to a greatness they never knew they had."
Wow.
"To have, together with others, righted some of the wrongs of this injured earth and its creatures. To have acted rather than waited for others to act."
Wow.
"And to have brought others with you. For the greatest leaders on earth or in heaven cannot lead alone."
Whoa. Okay. I mean, this is like
how that now.
This is the whole dissertation. It's on leadership in just leadership. One paragraph.
He captured the essence of what I've tried to do in one paragraph. Okay, and that's what I thought. I wanted to share that with you because I knew it would resonate for you.
Now I know where the inspiration comes from.
And exactly. And so to me, when you help others and you see others flourish and you see what they do, the joy you get from that feeds my soul more than anything. And to have acted rather than have waited.
Yeah.
You know, and for me that it's like if not me, who? And if not now, when? Okay, and it's such a profound moment. And to me, that's why you've been that to me, with your actions.
Yeah.
So that's why we feed on each other.
I have here what I believe to be one of your favorite sayings from a very good friend of yours whose boss you were. And I got some insights. And I was like, how's Robbie as a line manager? You know, and I was like, you know, when you haven't performed, how's that conversation? Because I haven't seen him angry. But here's the quote, and pardon me for paraphrasing. And he said, man has two legs. Money has four legs. If man chases money, he'll never catch it. But if man does the right thing, money will eventually catch him.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
You know, I learned that in Malaysia with our Malaysian partners.
Hmm.
And if you do try to chase money, you'll never catch it because it's got four legs.
Mm.
And often young entrepreneurs will come to me and say, I can't get money. And I say, look, you're trying to chase that money too hard. If you've got the right idea and you've got the right thing, people will come to you.
Yeah.
Don't treat money as your God.
Because, I mean, what you've just described, and it reminded me of the quote of this saying from the paragraph you read for us from the rabbi, which is very important, that you seem to do what you love, do right, be ethical, and help others.
Yeah.
And things will fall into place. You know, rather than necessarily be all about di-di-di-di. Not that you don't chase, not that you've got business objectives, goals, targets.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's bigger than that, isn't it?
You know what I also think, Impini, is that I sometimes have more confidence in other people than I have in myself.
Hiring right.
Do you know what I mean? So like often I'll think I can't do that, but I think but you can do that.
Mm.
And sometimes I don't see in myself, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So therefore I don't think I can do anything good or anything right or anything. I think that I can find the right people to do a much better job than me in that particular thing.
Mm.
So in a way I'm probably better as a conductor of the orchestra than to be the one to play the instrument. It's sometimes a confidence thing.
Yeah.
If I've got to prepare for something, I'm terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I came here with a speech came here with, I prepared that little line for you because I knew that you would love that line. And that was a very powerful line for me.
Yeah.
But if I had to come here with a speech and come here and you told me, go and prepare the following things, it's the worst out of me.
Yeah.
So I can't remember a thing.
But it's very important. Let me just capture some of the nuggets coming here because it's really, really, it's important because this podcast is really about leadership lessons from CEOs who've done it. What I'm getting very, very strongly is the importance of trusting others to help you in your journey from a mentorship and coaching point of view. The role your dad, the role the Antovens and all of that had in really, we are a team, we're together. But I also got a very powerful message around self-awareness. Knowing when it's time to let go and hand over the baton. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think lots of leaders sometimes hog positions and sometimes get threatened by the people who report to them and say, no, I'm the best in this thing. And yet, if you step out or you go somewhere else and you let that youngster come in after you take over that position, they take the business to another level.
Yeah.
And quite often we frustrate them because we are afraid and then hold back our own growth. I think that is that came out very strongly for me.
And I agree with you. And I'll tell you what I think is you got to trust in the youth.
Yeah.
Okay? The power of youth. And I'm getting 64 now, you know, getting older. I'm an OG.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You start getting to the point where I'm dressed by Jonty. I've got Tsepo jeans, you know. I've got Tsepo socks.
Mm.
Okay? So Jonty dresses me.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm guided by the youth in terms of you know, how to look cool, okay? But the reality is that, you know, in a South African context, for example, I'm very bullish about South Africa.
Yeah.
And I'm very bullish because of the youth of South Africa are incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And very respectful and very responsible is my experience.
Yeah.
And certainly at Conhill,
yes,
where I've been spending a lot of my time at Conhill, I'm seeing what the potential of the youth in this country is. And I'm talking about young people like Msaki.
Yeah.
Okay. As a poet, as a writer, wow, as a singer.
I can't wait to go to her concert.
Her concert's coming
up now.
No. Yeah.
She's amazing.
She is next level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Globally.
Yeah.
And the problem is that we as South Africans, the last 10 years, even the last 12 years, we've lost our confidence.
Mm.
And we've lost that kind of, we're looking down,
yeah,
as opposed to looking up,
mm,
okay? And particularly if you live in Joburg, mm, okay? Joburg as a city, we've learned to be hammered.
Mm.
We've just, there's no one loving Joburg.
Mm.
And that's not with Josie, my Josie. We're bringing dignity, human dignity through the constitution,
yeah,
of just lifting ourselves up again. But what I've seen in that journey is the talent. A guy like Tsepo, for example,
mm,
that his genes are best in the world.
Mm.
Okay, guys like Msaki, Luanda.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
as an intellect.
Yeah.
I mean, you were with her in Milan.
Yes.
You can not. She is as good as anything in the world, if not better.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of her understanding of human rights, her understanding of the law, of the constitution, and so you got. It's just, to me, we're sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah.
Of talent.
What guides your choice of what to get involved in? Because, I mean, you're involved from education with Vets Business School, and you're involved in Goodbye Malaria, health, and also in the arts and entertainment. I mean, the other time when I came to the Nando's head office, you were showing me the arts and how you've exposed that globally through the restaurants,
yeah,
and then actually got these unknown youngsters now the global market. It's everything, and furniture, creative spaces, and Conhill. It's quite diverse. Is there something that guides you, or is about what, who asks?
So for me, the starting point, the thread of everything,
yeah,
that's guided me, certainly in this last part of my journey, which is say the last 10 years,
yeah,
has been our constitution.
Wow.
Okay. So our constitution for me has given me the cover and the kind of comfort, okay, that South Africa is the best place to be right now, okay,
yeah,
and where we've come from as a nation, the dark hole that we came from as a nation,
yeah,
and the potential that we have as a nation through the lens of the constitution for me has been like the kind of guiding light in everything.
Yeah.
So everything has got human dignity at the center of what I'm trying to do.
I get it.
So that's been the thread for me. It's been like a journey that sometimes I feel like somebody's guided me. I don't know, like, there's a hand that's guided. Sometimes I can't explain it.
The invisible hand.
An invisible hand.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like,
yeah,
because the things that happen to me sometimes that you think, how the hell did that happen?
Wow.
The thing is, when you do good with expecting something back in return,
yeah,
you're not going to get that thing back in return.
Yeah.
If you do good without expecting anything back in return, the chances are whatever comes back,
you get 1,000 more.
Is 1,000 more. Okay, and so for me, this last, probably the last 5-6 years of the journey for me,
yeah,
has almost been, it felt like Nando's was the kind of hors d'oeuvres for what I'm doing now. So, and obviously without the Nando's experience and the people, because the Nando's brand has been built by thousands of people, as,
yeah,
as you know.
Yeah.
Okay, but it feels like the journey for me that Nando's was the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing right now.
Okay, so we'll move to the last two questions from me, because the people here are dying to talk to you, no doubt. You got me thinking, Robbie, when you talk about the depth and the richness of talent from our young people. I've certainly seen it. Innovation, creativity, and they're just changing the world. But what I also hear, the contrast of that from like your global Innovation Institute or Global Entrepreneurship Institute, they say we are in the bottom 50 of entrepreneurial activities and index in the world. Do you agree with that? Do you see that? Because the question is, I mean, where is the next Nando's or Discovery or Capitec or Take A Lot? Are you seeing that coming up, businesses that really can scale and become big, or you think even on that entrepreneurship we've kind of slowed down and lost our mojo? And what's driving that, if that's the case?
I think we've definitely lost our mojo, except for the last year or so.
Okay.
I have felt that mojo pick up over the last year. And I think that, that for me, the saddest thing is that as a nation, we've tended to lose a bit of talent. There's been a lot of drain and a lot of brain drain. So even, for example, for you, when you went to London, people went over to live and they've gone to see what the world has looked like. And to me, South Africa, the last, you know, with load shedding, with all the stuff that happened, I mean, it was such a hard place to build a business, to inspire people to say, there's going to be a faith in this country, stay with it, stay with it. For me, the GNU is an incredible opportunity for South Africa to rebirth itself. The difference now is that it's we the people, have civil society, have to get stuck in. You know, in the past, when Madiba was released and South Africa was going through the glory years of, you know, the Rainbow Nation, the people sat back and we just glowed if the government are going to do what they're going to do, and we don't have to do anything. It's just automatically going to happen. For me, the exciting part now is it's up to people, we the people. That's our constitution. We have to lean in and do shit. We have to. And it's so, in our hands now to do. Okay?
So I'm
very passionate about that. And that is an opportunity. So what you're seeing now, the last year, I've been, you know, I've been pitched the last almost like month.
Wow.
I've been pitched a few ideas.
And you see that there's a gem in some of this.
Oh, my God. And I'm telling you, like best in the world.
Wow.
Okay? Because I'm telling you, the problems we've got in South Africa, some of the world's problems, they're worse.
Yeah.
They're worse.
You're right, because the sentiment, you can just see that there's a bit of momentum.
The sentiment has changed. And we've got the G20 coming.
Absolutely. That's a big thing.
Huge thing.
And I believe they're going to be in the CBD.
We as the CBD have to go and grab the G20. Because if the G20, and it's not, the G20 is a summit.
Cannot just end up in Sandton.
If we don't grab it, it's going to end up in Sandton. Okay? And so the city itself, the city manager, the city, the province, we have to work to a public-private partnership to drag the people. But, you know, you have to do it. So it's in that action. But if we don't do it, we're going to lose the biggest opportunity, because the summit's not a three-day summit. It's a whole year. You've got people coming in. You know, we were approached the other day for 2,500 people coming to a human rights summit as part of the G20. You know what that means?
No, absolutely. And we got handed over the baton today, right?
On the 1st of December, we're getting the baton.
And all right.
We should have been planning this for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. But typical South Africa, we got a year
we
to plan it.
We go the last minute and we make it happen. Even the Mabogobogo, that's how we won the last World Cup, right? We're sitting on the edge of our seats towards the end.
I'll tell you, I mean, a Delhi that hosted it had a budget of $1 billion. Okay. National Treasury, I think, approved 400 million rand. So it's $20 million.
$20 million.
They had 3 years to plan it. We've got 1 year. And I tell you, we're going to pull it off.
And you know what? We will pull it off.
We'll pull it off.
So here's my last question to you. And you talked about mistakes. You talked about the learning journey. If you don't mind sharing, or the one that you don't mind sharing, what's the biggest F up you've done? It happens in business, right? And in that mistake or things really going horribly wrong, because it is inevitable in business, it is inevitable in leadership, what is the one or two top tips for this audience in terms of resilience and bouncing back?
So I think the biggest lesson that I've learned, and I said, you know, I fuck up every day. Okay, but the biggest thread of a fuck up, has been that what I didn't know as a young entrepreneur, was really what are the value drivers of the business. So what are the real value drivers? Okay, now to understand the value drivers of the business, you got to really understand the way the markets will perceive you, and I'm talking about you got to go and see what will Goldman Sachs value. How will they value Nando's?
Yeah.
If in 5 years' time we want to list the company on the New York Stock Exchange, what are the value drivers that they will look at in terms of the business? I'd never plugged into that kind of thinking. So I tell a lot of young entrepreneurs that understand really what creates value in your business and then focus on that. So, for example, franchising in our world actually detracted value. And I'm not talking about franchising in a country where you franchise.
For example, you've got
a master franchisee. Mm. But like if we go and franchise multiple countries, okay, and you think because we're getting in upfront fees and you're getting in the kind of master franchise fees that it's creating, even though the cash is coming in, it's not creating long-term sustainable value.
Wow.
And it creates it in time, but it's if you say the skyline is 5 years or the time frame is 5 years, then don't go and franchise.
Yeah.
Rather fix your underlying businesses. And that's something I didn't really understand when I started out. And for the first 15 years, worked like crazy all over the place. But if I'd worked smarter,
okay,
we'd probably be in less countries, but probably be more valuable. Ultimately, we have fixed up a lot of the fuck-ups that we made.
Yeah.
We were, when I...
Because you got out of some markets as well. Yeah.
When I was running the business, we were 32 countries. In 32, today we're in 23.
Yeah.
Okay, the business is much more successful without me running the business now.
And in fewer countries.
And in fewer countries. And I say, I didn't realize that. And so I just used to run around and think, well, this is how you build value. But actually, you build value by the real one is that Goldman's must come and look at your business, or financial advisors give you that kind of guidance to say, this is how we're going to value it if we look at the business. So things like, you know, have you got a common thread of HR? Is your brand consistent throughout the world?
Yeah.
Our brand was completely inconsistent.
Yeah.
Our brand in Australia didn't match the same in the UK. Didn't match. And so we had to bring one thread in. It took us years to build one thread.
But you had to humble yourself to learn that 100%. And listen to feedback. And
you have to listen to that. Mm. It was a very tough learning experience for me.
Looking in the mirror.
And when you look in the mirror and you look back and think, how stupid have I been to do that and then to fix it? Is a different story.
And
we're on that journey now.
When you talk about value drivers, I think sometimes we forget the power of lessons. And I'm not saying go out there and plan to fail, but the power of lessons that comes from our failures. Things that didn't go as well.
It's very, very important. You learn from the failures.
Yeah.
You don't learn from success.
Yeah.
Success brings hubris. It brings an arrogance.
Yeah.
It brings a sense of, you know, I don't think you learn much from success, honestly.
Take risk, fail a bit, and then...
You must. You have to fail.
Ladies and gents,
it's not easy.
We can go on and on, and I nearly finished all the time. But we do have time for questions from the audience.
I'm Tando. You say people energize you, but the opposite of that, people can easily drain you. And how do you protect yourself from that?
It's a very good question, and it's a tough answer. You've got to try and keep yourself around positive people and don't allow people to suck from you. You've got to be very clear. You've got to understand who's sucking. And you can't always be around people that are energizing you, unfortunately. But it's just knowing that those people are sucking from you and understanding that they are sucking from you. Almost categorize that they are to suck. And you try and avoid them at the wrong or right times. So you know what I mean? So it's in your choice. It's really understanding what it's first being conscientized as to those people are energizing and those people are sucking you. And it's a very difficult thing.
My name is Mbali Peja Olema. Looking back, the gift of hindsight, what is the one thing you would change knowing what you know now?
Mbali, I wouldn't change anything, hey? Mbali, to be honest with you, I sometimes feel I'm living somebody else's life. You know, because I've been so blessed that, you know, where I am now, the kind of privilege of being... The power of giving power away has enabled me, and going through that mental health issue and then dealing with that has enabled me to do things that in my dreams I couldn't think I'm going to be doing. So, for example, Josie and My Josie Now, we'll be reimagining the city of Joburg. I would never have thought in my dreams that I would be working to reimagine Joburg with Anglo American as an incredible partner and Wits University as an incredible partner. To have the privilege of having that opportunity, you know, and so you got to look at your life as a journey. I don't look back. I mean, I try not to, okay? I'm not one that looks at photos and then I get a bit depressed on photos. I see hair and I see like, hey, you know what I mean? I'm a futurist as opposed to a lot of people say, oh, let's talk about the old days. Oh, fuck the old days. Let's talk, what can we do? What can we change? Where can we go? You know, so to me, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm so privileged to have had this journey. There are little things along the way that you might say, I've done that wrong or didn't go through that road or wasted time on that. you know, to have been involved in a business like Nana's, to have been involved in malaria, to meet people along the way that help you on this journey, to be involved in Josie My Josie, still my first wife with 8 grandchildren, with 3 beautiful kids and their wives and 10 grandchildren. What a privilege.
Wow.
Honestly, I look back and think to myself, what the hell? Would I want to change anything? And if I change something there, maybe something else changed there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to go and dial something up. I'll just look back and say, thank God I've got what I've got. Just please, God, don't change anything. Because God can decide one day, ish, he's looking too happy. He's looking too happy, this guy.
My name is Lesego Scott. What have been your non-negotiables in deciding who to partner with on any scale? So what are the values you decided not to compromise on? And what is the common character you have observed among the people you draw inspiration from? What is it that they all have in common?
Sure. Interesting. I think the people we've partnered with and our kind of values, what we call them, because Mpini mentioned it, I'm just repeating what he said. He was a bit more polite, but we call them the don't fuck withs. He said the Fs. I'm saying we have things called the don't fuck withs, which are like the values that you don't play with. You know what I mean? That there are certain boundaries. And I think that we've tried to find partnerships where the values, and our 5 values are pride, passion, courage, integrity, family, you know, of the kind of Nando's values. So it's really, you're trying to partner with people that share those values. And it's not always evident in the early stages, because in any relationship, it's like I always tell I told my daughter when she goes on a date, you know, just see how the person that you're on the date with, how they treat the waiter. You know, how they treat the waiter is how they're going to treat you ultimately. You know, they can be nice to you, but they're rude to the waiter. That's not a good sign. And so you've got to try to find those things where people are quite natural. Mm. And it's not a skill, because you change. I mean, I've changed over my 40 years of my marriage with my wife, and we've had our really tough times together. And it's because we've managed to find ourselves, you know, at different levels that we've stayed. But it's that kind of commitment of staying. So I think, you know, that's been a very, very kind of fundamental part of who we are. And the characteristics I look for in people is different things from different people. And it gets back to your question, is it's not like a one size fits all for everything. You know, when I'm feeling down and I want to get some kind of inspiration, I know who to phone. You've got to know who to pull on, who to pick on, and also how you behave to other people. Who are you to that person? When they're phoning you, are you lifting them up? So the other night I was out for dinner and somebody said to me, oh, you look so tired tonight. I thought, you know, fuck you, man. What do you mean I look tired? Why are you telling me I'm looking tired? You're dragging me down. You know what I mean? Like,
so you ain't denial.
Why say that to somebody?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I'm saying some people do that. And I thought to myself, should I snap at him or should I just shut up? And I thought, you know what, shut up. And I just walked away, okay, because if I snapped, I would have felt worse about myself, okay? And so it's who are you to other people, and then how do you get that back from other people? So I look for, you know, you didn't say I only look for optimists. There are certain people I go to say, I've got to make this decision. What do you think? And I want people that are real, and they're going to say to me, no, you know what, you're wrong. My son, Jonty, gives me that kind of inspiration, because I go sit with him and say, Dad, you're wrong. Do it like that. And you're hearing it from young people.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes, but there's a beauty in that, to listen. And sometimes you don't have to listen. You know, you can do what you want to do. I was fortunate that my father gave me advice, but never said to me, I told you so. When he gave me advice and I failed, and I went back to him and he said, he would never say, I told you so. So I've been so privileged in my life.
Robbie, it's so important to actually have people that can have authentic conversation and feedback with you.
For
because
sure.
Quite often, when you're so successful in a position of power, people kind of suck up to you.
Definitely.
They only tell you what you want to hear. So you never had to know the truth.
It's the worst thing.
Yeah.
It's we've had that honest relationship where we can sit and talk. I can talk to you. Okay. I get emotional when I say that, because you've got people that you can sit and say, listen, Penny, what do you think of this?
Yes.
And say, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? It's like, best idea I've ever heard. Yeah, you go do it. Meantime, thinking, this is fucking mad. You know?
Meanwhile, it's not, right?
Meantime, it's not. You know, you got to, it's authentic people.
Yeah.
And how authentic are you sometimes? And it's not always easy to be authentic when somebody comes with something that you want to push them down. That's a shit idea. Leave that.
Yeah.
You got to be a bit sensitive, you know. But because I can tell you, any idea can work as well. So you can never just reject things from people. But it's to me, relationships are critical. For me, it's about long term relationships, and those things are so critical. You know, it's really walking the road together.
You reminded me of something when you mentioned how you have had tough times and had differences or disagreement at times with your wife, which happens in marriage. But I think I have an idea of where she got a little bit unhappy with you. Apparently, you are useless around the house. So bad that you can't change a light bulb.
No, I've
been told about this fancy toolbox that is there in your house, but it only has balloons.
No. I can change a light bulb. I tell you where my wife is.
How about lawnmower?
No, I'm not good at. Okay. I tell you what I'm also really bad at is insects.
Yeah.
I cannot, like, you know those Parktown prawns and like spiders and stuff? I'll call my wife to come and take the spider. That's not my field.
It's good to know yourself.
South Africa has evolved, as you know. It's now vibrant, it's multicultural and diverse. However, its laws and policies have not really kept the pace. What do you really think, in your opinion, can the government really do to now open up the industry for more businesses to emerge, such as Nando's?
Look, I think that, you know, when you look at the world is in such a mess, okay? And I think that we've relied too much on government, I think. Okay, and we the people have the power. We've played too much in what can government do. And yes, government can enable, government can do certain things, they can change certain kind of fundamentals, but it's really up to the people to make the real impact. And when we're not happy with government, we need to be angry. We're not angry enough. Yes, you see it through the election. And the people voted, and we saw change, real fundamental change. And that was because we're a democracy, and we become too dependent on being too quiet. And we're not angry enough, okay? And I think we've got to be angry in particular ways, not slashing and burning and breaking, but really in terms of that if we're not happy with NHI or we're not happy with something that's going to happen, there's ways of actually demonstrating it. But I also think that, for example, with Josie Majosi working with the city of Joburg, my experience has been quite interesting. You know, the people, the actual people in the city, the city manager is very, very capable. There's a fantastic team of people that want to do good. Politically, there hasn't been a political will to allow the people to do the job. But now what's happening, you're starting to see those people, they're getting hope. And they're getting, we're working very closely with them to actually help the people that are doing the work at the bottom to flow up. And government can't stand in the way. I can tell you now, it's very interesting what's going on in Joburg. You'll see the next couple of months, you're going to see Joburg start lifting its head properly, I think. And so government can't
wait.
Stop.
I can't wait.
Yeah, you're going to see.
Can't wait.
It's too much power in the people. And the actual city manager and the guy fixing the potholes, he doesn't want pothole patrol to come to the inner city. He wants to fix that pothole himself. Yeah. It's amazing the pride that people have when they're allowed to do certain things. And sometimes political will has stopped that. So there's like no one's really caring for the people. We're in a very exciting phase in South Africa now. I'm very happy with the government of national unity, I think, is a way to go. I'm very, very excited about it.
So what would you say to someone who's sitting at home right now, listening to the conversation that you guys are having about how optimistic you are about the future of SA? What advice would you give them to say they shouldn't lose hope about what's going on right now? How did you identify what your customers truly valued in your early days
And if you were to advise an entrepreneur right now trying to start a new business, what would you tell them?
The first struggle that South Africa had was against apartheid. The next struggle is against poverty now. We're in the struggle against poverty right now. It is a crazy, and poverty is so dehumanizing and takes all dignity away from you. If you can't come home at night and feed your family, you know, how do you feel about that? So to me, it's priority number one. And personally, I think we've gone through the worst 10 years, certainly from a Nando's point of view and from my experience of running a business in South Africa for 37 years. This has been, I told Jonty earlier, this last 5 years has been the hardest 5 years we've ever had to dig deep. With load shedding and with everything else that went on in this country, it was the toughest period. What we're starting to see now is green shoots of optimism starting to develop. The G20 coming is a very, very positive thing. So somebody at home, first of all, you've got to be part of something. You've got to get out of home and get into, just start trading, start just being into the system. Okay, because the system is going to slowly start lifting up. You're going to see the opportunities are going to become enormous in the next, I think the next 5 years are going to be the best 5 years South Africa's ever seen. And it's not because of the kind of rainbow nation, magical Madiba moment. It's because we've gone through such shit. We're still standing. Load shedding is past us. They're going to fix the roads. They're going to fix the ports. You're starting to see public-private partnerships starting to lift up the economy. It's going to be based on fundamentals. And that slowly is going to lift the country. You're going to see. That's what I think. So one's got to be a little bit patient, but it's going to slowly start coming. Interest rates are coming down. Cycles are starting to turn. And there's going to be a massive opportunity. But be educated. There's lots of opportunities to be educated. And not educated by going to university. You can be educated by trading and selling and just getting onto the street. So to me, it's just hang in there, but be part of the game. You know, don't sit at home and watch, you know, TV. Get stuck in, because jobs, there are jobs out there, and people are entrepreneurs. South Africans are incredible entrepreneurs. You know, we've seen that. So from a customer point of view, from a Nando's customer point of view, it was about share of stomach. Like, who's coming to eat? You know, for me, to start segmenting everybody and say this is that, you know, obviously certain, you can segment markets and you can segment your customers. From a Nando's point of view, from when we started out, it was anyone that was hungry, we would serve anybody. You know, it was about share of stomach. Like, how can we feed you and give you the joy of and the pleasure of eating a Nando's chicken, you know? And sometimes you can overcomplicate things. Mm. You know, don't overcomplicate it. And I'm one for really simplifying. So you can go to business school and learn all kinds of theories and all kinds of stuff. At the end of the day, just do it. I mean, that's the kind of Nike thing. And don't, if somebody comes in and buys a pair of Tsepo jeans, that's beautiful. You know, try and segment exactly who that person is and put it in there. Ooh.
You touched on something very important, though. The joy of eating that chicken, the experience, the joy of being in the restaurant. Yeah. So only now people talk about journey designs and the feeling and the experience. Robbie was ahead of his time. He talks about the experience. People are talking about sensory. Yeah. They're investing in that. But for you, that experience,
it's been there from
day one. It's been there from the beginning.
Yeah. No, it's
forget
it's,
that.
It's very important.
It's like, after I leave that restaurant, how do I feel?
But that's for an entrepreneur, anyone starting a business, how do I feel is a very important thing. Okay, and it gets back to, how do you make people feel? Okay, and it's very much, people will forget what you said, but people won't forget how you made them feel.
Absolutely.
And that's a very important part of business. And any entrepreneur, you must be very excited about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's why you mustn't do it for the money, because if you do it for the money, you're gonna die out. If you do because you really love what you're doing and you've got a passion for it, that'll find you. And it's not always easy to find your passion. I didn't wake up and say, I'm going to do chicken and Nando's and whatever. You know what I mean? Like, this wasn't on a... It found me. And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you're guided.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
The chicken found you.
The chicken found me. I don't know. Like, malaria found me. And Josie found me.
Thank you, Rob and Yimpini. you find that Amazon is talking about Whole Foods, where now they don't have attendance in the shop, and also these global business models like your Uber Eats. How can we prepare our youth to be able to play in this area? Because these are the new business models. Because if you check, last week, Checkers actually came out and said only 23% of their 60-60 motorbike riders are South African. And then they actually did a survey and found that South African youth don't want to be on those scooters because it's demeaning to them. It's not classy. So you find that it's mostly foreign drivers that are there. How can we try and help our youth to actually take on these opportunities? Because apparently a driver makes plus minus 20,000 a month.
I mean, it's a very good question. I don't think I'm qualified to answer it, okay? Because to me, the kind of next economy on AI and technology, all kids, my grandchildren are playing on AI and tech. They don't really want to work. It's like that. They want to sit and be in the next kind of world and to do work where you're grilling chicken or you're actually, you know, doing hard stuff. You're finding the next generation are spoiled. Okay, they're not as, you know, even if I look at the inner city of Joburg and I see that a lot of people are risk averse, okay, and they don't want to go into the inner city, it's dangerous, they're a bit scared, whatever it is. Yet the immigrants that came to South Africa in the early days would have gone in there, and those are the people that built fortunes. There's a point in time where people have to get stuck in, and it is like a tipping point, if I can put it that way, where, because the challenge of AI and the challenge of new tech is a much lazier model, you know what I mean, as opposed to working with your hands and getting dirty and grimy and having sweat and sauce on your fingers. And Mpini knows this very well. The restaurant business is the hardest business in the world. I can tell you now, hospitality is tough. Okay, probably a doctor is maybe a little bit tougher, but hospitality is tough because the thing is, you're working long hours, you're working on holidays, you're working, and we're selling a chicken and chips. You know, we're not selling a big deal like you can sell a deal for 10 million bucks is a contract. We're selling, you know, chicken and chips, 50 bucks. And that 50 bucks is adding in. So whatever business you're in, you got to make it sexy. You got to make it desirable. We took the restaurant business and we've made it into an aspirational business. So we've look at how we dress up people. We look at how we play the music in our restaurants. We look at Mzwai, how he does heatwave radio. So I would suggest that Checkers try and make the drivers a bit more sexy. You know what I mean? Not in terms of looking, okay, but in terms of how that job for 20 grand,
yeah,
that's a lot of money,
yeah,
okay? And therefore, you've got to maybe look at how do you pimp up the kind of aspiration,
yeah,
that people actually want to come and be a driver.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's how you look at it. Because the natural tendency now is to sit back and do everything on technology, yeah, and not to be the driver. So how do you make the driver into a real icon and make it a bit sexy? Yeah. I think, I don't know, would be my kind of... And we've tried to do that in our restaurants where it's the people that make the chicken, so we celebrate our people.
Mm.
But otherwise, it's the hardest job in the world. You know, it can really be a tough job, but we make it fun. And that's why we say, you know, happy people in our restaurants, happy people, make happy customers, makes a happy bank manager. It's not a very complicated formula. But if you look after your own people, but you need to make the looking after your own people very aspirational and excited. So that when they join Nando's, they're feeling part of a winning team and the uniform looks good, everything. I would suggest maybe that's an answer.
People. Happy people, happy customer.
Happy bank manager. A happy Nedbank.
And we are here at Nedbank.
Let me give a shout out to Nedbank.
What a okay? close, yeah.
Because Nedbank have been our partners for 37 years.
Wow.
Okay, honestly. Wow. And honestly, I mean, through COVID, which was the toughest times.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, we at COVID times, we just got to the point where we had money in the bank for the first time.
Yeah.
Ever. Okay, and then yes, we paid all our people.
Yeah.
Salaries, and we just saw that money, the bank overdraft, going back again.
Mm.
And Nedbank were behind us all the way, and they've really have been. And I'm not just saying it, but they have really been great partners to us.
And I didn't even know that when we invited you, that you bank with Nedbank.
We bank with Nedbank. We make a transactional banking, we bank with Nedbank.
They've been a wonderful partner to CEO Nights with Nyimpini. They are our main sponsor in association with Avis Chauffeur Drive. I believe they picked you up at home and brought you here.
Brilliant.
And we're also fortunate to have the sponsorship from a media partner of Business Day and Financial Mail. Robbie, you and I can talk forever. There's so much richness, there's so much depth, you can go on and on and on. Really, thank you. I've known you for a long time. Every time we have a conversation, I still continue to learn and grow. So thanks for the generosity of your time. Thanks for all you do for this country. Many people have chosen to leave, and you said, I'm going to be part of rebuilding this country and taking it to another level. And this is the spirit of Take Charge. That's what we mean by Take Charge. Be intentional, roll up our sleeves, and make a difference. And you inspire me for all what you do in that space. So thank you so much. And to our wonderful audience, I hope this has been a great use of your time. I thank you for joining us. I hope you leave with some insights and nuggets out of this conversation, but more importantly, action. Because coming here and learning something and do nothing about it is not good enough. The conversation doesn't end here. We are on all social media platforms. Continue to chat with us, continue to engage with us. Do come back for the next episode. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.